What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome back to Golden State Hoop. We were away last week, and there's so much stuff to talk about. Have you seen, well, you've seen it because I've sent it to you, but all of the WNBA stuff as far as the thoughts about the expansion draft, and we'll go through who Ben and Sabrina from The Athletic chose to protect, and I'll see if you agree or not with their protections for the upcoming expansion draft. The CBA, of course, there's a new extension. And then in Warriors land, it is, I don't know, they're just like staring at 500 like for the rest of the year. Like, do you, is that a word? Like, right now they're in the eighth spot for the playoffs, right? It's still early, but, you know, I was like, oh yeah, you know, they're going to sit around 46 to 48 wins. And maybe they still will. They have this willingness to kind of do well when they need to do well. But man, they are dead average right now. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about some other NBA news too, because there's some Giannis news. There's some Chris Paul news. More Zion news, unfortunately for Zion. So we'll hit all of that stuff up today. And let's start out with our discussion on the Golden State Warriors. What do the Warriors do without Steph? Like, I was having this question, I was just a conversation with your brother last night, and he was like, well, who is Moses Moody on this team? And I said, well, is it with Steph or without Steph? Because the Moses Moody with Steph gets shots and rhythm, is a three-point shooter, and has opportunities to make plays. And the Moses Moody without Steph, it looks like he's slow as molasses, can't get his own shot off. And yesterday, I didn't even know if he played 10 minutes yesterday. It was really bad. But it made me think, like, when Steph doesn't play, can they do things to compete, because they are so specifically they're created specifically in the mindset of him. And so then when he's not there, it's almost like they don't really know what to do offensively.
I mean, yeah, it makes a little bit of sense given that the offense is, you know, it's for Steph, all the off ball movement. It's because you have to worry about a guy past the 3-point line that no other team really has. So it makes sense when he goes out that, you know, some of the stuff they do doesn't work because you don't have to worry about someone, you know, from past the 3-point line. So it's probably easier to stop. But yeah, Moses's flaws get probably exposed more when Steph's missing. Steph's able to help hide some of the slowness that he has, you know, and then I feel like the guys who kind of are able to make it look decent when he's gone are people who are kind of able to do something with the ball in their hands. Pajemski looks like he had a relatively good game. To be honest, I only finished about half of last night's game. I heard that I actually had a ticket to last night's game. But I sold it because we were supposed to go with some friends, and then it ended up not working out. And I was like, well, shoot, I just bought this ticket. Like, let's see if I could sell it. It's a singular ticket. And I was able to sell it.
Did you get your money back?
It was one of those where you could buy like a $30 Warriors ticket. Doesn't matter. It was one of those deals. So I bought a $30 Warriors ticket, and I was worried that I wouldn't be able to sell it because I was buying like a deal. But then they let me sell it. And so I was like, I don't even care about making money. Like, I just want to make my $30 back. And someone bought it within like seconds. But people who are able to do something with the ball in their hands, or people who, you know, are their roles on the team when Steph's there, is to be like a cutter. Like, GP2 kind of just like hangs out around the rim and is able to just like get these inside passes. And Will Richard kind of does a little bit of that too. But, you know,
And then oddly, GP2 has his two best games of the season with Steph not there. Last night and then against the Pelicans, where he was awesome both nights. So weird.
I kind of feel like it's a little like, I know Steph's older and there's going to be more games without him than there ever were before, you know, because he's getting older and he might need to miss some games and there's going to be some injuries that come that maybe don't happen when he's younger, post all the ankle stuff. But like, I mean, this team's nothing without him. They have no shot. So I guess I still have a little bit of optimism, you know, around that. I think I had like higher optimism, of course, going into the season, but now we're floating around 500 and it's like, okay, can you still be that 48-49 win team? I think, you know, talked about it on a podcast yesterday on the, we did a BAM show yesterday, but it's just,
I saw that you guys actually,
yeah, we actually posted and then my co-host forgot to tell me that my mic wasn't on. He just didn't use his ears. I guess it's so different. The AirPod to the mic. But I think there is still a little something, you know, with the heavy schedule, you know, it's going to even out. So how do they play once it evens out? You know, they are still, if you look back on the year, they have won some games where you're like, oh, is this team, you know, like you said, this team has kind of always been able to put it together when they're just like kind of wake up and win a tough game. But then, you know, they lose some bad ones. And I have some examples, of course, like that Lakers game. The Lakers look like a really good team. And even when LeBron wasn't there, they looked really good. And I know it was the first game of the season, but it kind of felt like the Warriors did not see them as a threat. Like they kind of handled business pretty easily. And then the second game of the season, you go to overtime against Denver. Denver's the number two or number three team in the West right now or something like that. Like kind of feels like that's a game that they wouldn't have won in previous seasons. A game that goes to overtime against Jokic. He's kind of put us away in a lot of games since that playoff series in 2021-22. And then, you know, you go throughout the season, then you have some bad losses, Milwaukee, Indiana, but then you have those two Spurs wins where it's just like, this team can really get it done. And then, of course, some more bad losses. And what does that leave you? It leaves you 500. You're just, you win games that, you know, maybe it feels like you shouldn't. You lose games that you should win, and then you just even out to 500. So I'm just wondering, you know, Melton coming back, like I listened to Plus Minus, and I know that there was a conversation with TK and Draymond where Draymond's like, I don't want to expect much from Melton because I felt like we did that with Dennis Schroeder last year, and that kind of weighed on him heavily. And he, you know, then you see what ends up happening with Dennis. We put too much on him. He doesn't perform. He kind of gets blamed, and then he's off. He gets shipped off to
TK has a little bit of drama from Schroeder because he thought Schroeder was going to be helpful and then he wasn't.
But with Melton, I have some hope that, you know, even if he's 80% of the guy he was for those quote unquote six games of last year, that it's going to be a help. You see what Seth does, 14 points yesterday. And I only watch like half of the game. So when the half that I watch, Buddy Hield puts up a three, goes in. His second three goes in. His third three, it gets fouled, so it doesn't count. So he shoots three free throws. But that guy, man, is just a completely different ball player when he's ever able to put the ball in.
Then I think he missed the next seven, five.
I think it was. I think he finished 2 for 9.
Oh, is that what it was?
But, you know, I think there are, we talked some trades yesterday, and I have some names to propose. But I think if this team goes as currently constructed, maybe you're a little bit above 500. I think we've all been expecting something to happen with that Kuminga thing. And it's like, I think something definitely needs to happen. But, you know, ultimately, like, I feel like a lot of the conversation this year is like the depth surrounding the big three, like Draymond, Steph, and Butler. It's like, can anyone else produce other than those three guys? And so the depth is getting criticized, but I feel like last year in the playoffs, it kind of felt like you didn't hear that. And of course, when you're winning, you don't hear that. But like, I almost remember some stuff where it's like, oh, we like the Warriors' depth. We like that, you know, some of these guys at the end of the bench that are able to come in and help, and, you know, some Gui Santos minutes sprinkled here and there when they're winning, and it looks way better when they're losing.
He's barely even playing these days.
You know, it's again, we've said it, it's the same roster. Plus, you know, Horford and Melton. So minus Looney. So like it's plus Seth. So, you know, do you have any thoughts about this team? Because I do want to throw some names at you.
Well, my couple things. The worry is that the worse Kuminga plays, like, the harder it is going to be for them to get somebody who can be helpful. He had an awful first half. The same indecision, can't decide what he's going to do, and thus then the defense collapses, and then he's got to pass the ball out. But in the second half, he started crashing the boards, played much better. I know a lot of Warriors fans are wondering why he didn't play late. I know his agent was tweeting about it. Steve Kerr did not go back to Kuminga. And so that is a worry of mine. The other part of it is, and we kind of talked about this in the beginning of the season, which is when the roster is that old, you just hope that the injuries kind of are spread out, or they all happen at one point and then you're healthy at the other point. Right now, no Steph. And the latest news is that he's going to be out at least until they believe they come back home, which is like 9 days from today as we're recording December 3rd, Wednesday evening. So that would be, he would miss the entire road trip because they play Philly and Cleveland and Chicago in three games, and then they come back. Let me make sure I have this right. So, yeah. So it's Philly Thursday, Cleveland Saturday, Chicago Sunday. Then they have all the way off until Friday. And this is is this because of the cup?
Yeah, the cup's next weekend.
So they have a bunch of days off just to. They'll actually be able to practice, which because of all the back-to-backs and we talked about the scheduling and stuff, this will be a nice rest for them. And then they get Steph back. Maybe they get Horford back. I don't know if Melton is going to be back by then.
Melton's back next game. He's playing
against Philly. Is he really playing this on the road trip?
Yeah.
No way. Oh, I did not see that. That's that is great news, actually. And then, like, you saw the addition of Seth, and your brother and I were talking about the, like, comparing Seth to Buddy. And Buddy's shot, he's struggling with the shot. And we saw that last year. He'd get hot for, like, two or three games, and he'd be cold for, like, the next six or seven games. And then in the playoffs, he played so well. And one of the things that we noticed is that Seth can actually create his shot with his footwork. You see a lot of those sidestep shots, and he the way he shoots it, he actually shoots it a lot different than Steph. He shoots it above his head, so he can actually get that thing high. He was doing that yesterday. I was like, because you see him, and he's got the long tights on, and he's got the headband on, and he kind of plays like old man game in the way he moves. And like he didn't look like he was in fantastic shape. And then all of a sudden, just busting out all these shots and they're just dropping. It's like, oh my God, where did this guy come from? You know what it reminded me of a little bit? You remember that movie I took you and your brother to, Uncle Drew? That's what it reminded me. I was like, when did Seth become Uncle Drew out there? But that's great. And Melton, I think is a little bit of a Obi-Wan Kenobi, your only hope here, at least with their roster.
But you
right
know,
now,
like, if that's yeah, like how the roster is now. But if that's like your only hope, then like this team's already done to begin with.
yeah, absolutely. But to go back to that point about the depth is good when you're winning, and when you're losing,
like trade everyone.
Then you point at it. Those are most of my thoughts. But Horford coming back, like, we haven't seen him. People were like, "Oh, I wish we had Looney," and I'm like, "Yeah, of course." But let's see if Horford actually blends with this team a little bit better. So that would be the other piece. But Jimmy Butler is questionable. I think Kuminga's questionable. Steph is still out. So. These guys just need to get a little healthier. So, what were your trade thoughts?
Just that there's a I've seen some trade rumors. Of course, the big one, Giannis. There was a Zion trade rumor. Like, I know we've always kind of speculated with Zion, but I feel like it was the first time I've actually seen a report that was like, you know, we'll accept an offer for Zion. I was like, oh, wow. Okay. So we're here. But there's been one that hasn't been reported that I've been kind of intrigued with. And I mentioned it for at length in my podcast from yesterday, but you know, there's a player on Memphis that is making $38 million right now that, you know, plays the four, but has the size of a five and gets knocked for not rebounding and went to Michigan State. So he's buddies with Draymond. I feel like I would like to know what Memphis fans think about Jaren Jackson's trade availability, because he's having a pretty poor season to start. Like, it's, and it's funny because I'm just in so many fantasy leagues. So sometimes I see, like, I judge them from a fantasy point perspective and not even from like a, you know, a points rebounds perspective, but I have them in some of my leagues and I'm just like, wow, dude, like this is like some bench player like output right now. But, and it's funny because I'm about to say I want him from the Warriors, but it's more because I think you can buy low, or you might be able to buy low. So he's making $38 million right now. And then next year is when a big contract kicks in. It's like $50 million a year for 4 or 5 years, player option. And he's going to be like 29, 30 by the end of it. But just to be able to, like, you know, you put together Kuminga and Buddy and you throw some picks in there. It's like, what does that do? Like, I'm just confused about Memphis's situation, what they're looking at, what they want to do. Like, it looked like this year they were probably going to go try to do something again. You know, they finally got Ja and Jaren back healthy, and then it's like clearly Ja's not available and Edie was out to start the season. And so I don't necessarily know what's going on over there and who's available and who's not, but I'm surprised I haven't heard his name floated in trade rumors, considering how much he's going to get paid next year. Like, what he's putting out right now, and then you see a $50 million price tag on him starting next year. Like, how is that not someone maybe you want to get off? In Memphis's perspective. So I think he would be awesome on the Warriors. I know that there's the foul thing that Draymond's always kind of able to bait him with when we play him.
I was about to say their foul problems don't get better with him.
I'm just wondering if there's some type of like mentor relationship that Draymond already has with him with the Michigan State thing. I know I've already said that three times, but you know, I just wonder if this is a good place for him to be able to.
Who would Memphis take back?
Like it all it needs to be is like, I think J.K. Moody and a $1 million player, whoever that is on the Warriors. Are you bringing?
And picks, yeah,
of course,
right?
Of course.
Memphis would
of course
picks
some picks,
him.
Yeah. But I mean, you could even swap Moody and Buddy. I'm just saying, from a money perspective, like that's what it takes to get there. From a picks perspective, like I'm of the camp of like send in as much as you can. Of course, I don't want to get fleeced, but I wonder if his trade value has dropped, say, what it was the start of the year or last year, even where, you know, I think for the Warriors, I think Bill Simmons did like a Gafford mock trade, and I think Gafford's great, but I just wonder, like, Jimmy's not really a shooter. Draymond, of course, is not a shooter. Gafford cannot shoot the three ball. Like, you know, we're in the era of like four shooters on the court at all times. Like, I know we've kind of been a Draymond Looney 4 or 5 non-shooter thing for the longest time now, but I think we're kind of past that with, you don't want three non-shooters in your starting lineup. So I've just been trying to think of who is a center that stretches the floor that doesn't give up anything defensively. And that's a rare breed. That's a hard player to find. That's a costly player, because any player that could stretch the floor, say like a Vucevic, they give up the defense. Mm-hmm. Quentin Post, they give up the defense, and you could name them all. But there's a couple in Miles Turner and Jaren Jackson Jr. that both might be available, given if Giannis is gone, that, you know, they could shoot the three and not give up anything defensively. And I know Miles Turner's had a rough start, and I've already mentioned Jaren Jackson Jr.'s rough start. But man, you put him in this system where they are like the fourth guy. Like, I would take that risk. And I think that's what they need right now, is a big. And what's funny is both of those players kind of get criticized also for rebounding. But the Warriors do a really good job of gang rebounding. And I just wonder if you have a 7-footer out there that can move really well, could play offense, could play defense, like, you know, if things start to change. And so that's kind of what I want to know from maybe some people in the know, is what is Jaren Jackson Jr.'s availability? Because I think he's been not playing well. I think his contract looks kind of crazy right now, starting next year, $50 million for a year. And I think the Warriors picks could be potentially considered valuable, you know, in those later years. I don't know how much the Warriors would want to give up of those later years that Steph might not be around, because those could be some pretty valuable picks. But I just wonder what it would take to get something like that done. And, you know, Marcus said on the pod today, he's just Coby White or Trey Murphy. I'm down for either of those guys, down for either of those guys. But it's like, can you do Jaren Jackson Jr. and a Keon Ellis? So someone to help with the point of attack that could be in the rotation. Yeah. You know, like, does that, that just feels like it solves a lot. And I feel like you got to buy low.
Well, what about we talked about this person because we got to watch the Houston game in person. We talked about TJ McConnell because that was the name last week that had come out that he could possibly be moved. Would the Warriors be interested in TJ McConnell? Like, if you saw how Pat Spencer played last night, like, Pat Spencer was one of the only guys who could actually get to the spot that he wanted. And TJ McConnell is that, plus a better shot, plus a better finisher. So that would be interesting, too, to help with that second team. But yeah, it is players like that. And for whatever reason, you know, maybe the Warriors just thought Pods was going to be that guy, and he's just not. But they could use somebody like that, like you mentioned, just to get to the paint. And then it feels like everybody wants Trey Murphy.
Though. And the thing is, he's one of the guys that I haven't seen him or Coby White, like, get like, oh, we're looking to trade them. Either of those guys, I haven't seen anything from their respective teams. I just think Trey Murphy is like, okay, say the Pelicans want to be like, oh, we have this player named Derek Queen who's a rookie and just got us 45 points. Like, we think we want to start maybe shifting to building around that guy. Well, guess who fits around Derek Queen? Mm-hmm. Trey Murphy. Guess who fits around Zion? Mm-hmm. Trey Murphy. So it's like, I don't know why they would want to trade him. But, you know, I guess it's, I don't know. So,
yeah, they need to get rid of Zion. They don't need to get rid of Trey Murphy.
I completely agree with that. That's why I think it's going to be a player who, you know, might not like Wiggs. When we got Wiggs, I was kind of like, really? Like, that's what we got from, like, you know, like, I wasn't like head over heels about the idea of Wiggins. Cause I mean, of course, people may be listening to this now or being like, are you kidding me? Like, Wiggins is like, dude, revisionist history. Like, I don't know if you remember what Wiggins was when we got him, but it was a player who hadn't done anything really. And, you know, there was those questions always about like, oh, he kind of has like that Buddy Hield cycle where it's like, wow, Wiggs looks really good for three games. And then he kind of disappears for X amount of games. And then of course that ends up being like one of the best trades, I think, in this dynasty's just lifespan, being able to get that draft pick and Wiggins for D'Angelo Russell. That was a fleece.
You got a title out of it.
Fleece in a half.
Absolutely.
So I think it's going to be something like that, where it's like, I wasn't head over heels about Wiggs. I would be head over heels about Jaren. Like, I would be very excited to get that guy on the team. But is there, you know, think maybe more in that direction than some of the obvious fits, I guess.
So the last time we talked, I had mentioned, you know, they really need to go like 5-1 or 4-1 on this 5-game homestand.
Yeah.
3-2 almost felt like, you know, we should do better than that. And then they go 2-3. and some of that is because Steph gets hurt. Now, who knows? They may not win that Houston game, even if he's healthy, because they were tooth and nail the whole time. But 2-3, and then you get the kick in the nuts of Steph getting hurt at the same time. So that was a bad homestand. Now, my question to you is, no Steph. Jimmy's questionable for Thursday, but they go Thursday, Saturday, Sunday.
Another
three games. Cleveland is not fantastic, but the Warriors match up terribly against Cleveland. I'm putting that one as an L. So that's the one I say they lose. Can they beat Philly, who is a little bit above 500, and Chicago, who is a little bit below 500, but they're all sort of right in the same mix? Can they beat those two teams and actually gain a game on this road
trip? I think it feels more likely that that's not going to happen, but I don't think it's completely like out of the question. I think they've kind of have had Chicago's number, you know, since 2020. I mean, probably for the longest time, but I think like even this newer iteration of Chicago where you had the LaVine, DeMar, duo. Like, I know it's not there anymore, but they've, I don't remember them really losing games against Chicago since then. So maybe you can pull something off there. And then Philly's going to be an interesting one because Tyrese Maxey's been pretty crazy to start the year. And I don't know if Embiid's back or not.
And who will guard him?
Jeez, he's talking about guards that have killed us this year and having career games and Reed Shepherd and Ryan Rollins. Allow me to introduce you one of the best guards, scoring guards in the league.
How's their rookie? Is their rookie still playing well?
He is, but he was hurt. So he had a pretty good game. I forget if it was yesterday or 2 days ago, but yeah, Jared McCain's back too. So like they've kind of have a full, they're starting to become healthy and have a full lineup. And I'm interested in how their rotations look because they just have a lot of guys that are, I feel like I would want on the Warriors. But that's a team to beat as they're trying to figure all that stuff out. Like that's a win you could sneak. And we've also haven't really always had like the roughest time with Joel. He always plays well, but I think we usually beat the Sixers. Like we killed them last year when I went. So it's possible. I just don't think it's likely. Of course, when you're missing your best player, the entire system is you know, based on how this player plays. See some Seth Curry, man. I'm interested in seeing some Seth Curry. How about that's the state of this team.
All right. So I guess the other thing I wanted to talk, you mentioned it a little bit already with the news about Giannis, but let's talk a little bit about the NBA here.
Hey, this is Steve Gorman, radio host, sports commentator, former drummer for the Black Crowes. The winter holidays are here, a time for festive celebrations, family gatherings, and ringing in the new year. Whether it's a holiday party, a night out with friends, or just relaxing by the fire with a few drinks, it's a season full of good cheer. But here's something else to add to your holiday plans, a safe and sober ride home. Just like in sports and music, always have a game plan. And the most important part of any plan is sticking to it. If you plan to drink, take that plan a step further. Call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or have a designated driver lined up before the night begins. Drinking and driving is a decision that can change your life and the lives of others forever. A DUI, a crash, an injury, the consequences are real and lasting. So please, for your sake and for everyone else on the road, make the smart choice. Get a sober ride home. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
I don't know why I was so sad about this, but Chris Paul got cut, or they came to terms and they waived him. And so he's no longer a Clipper, and he and Ty Lue weren't getting along, and people were kind of like, the report that I saw was people weren't happy with how vocal he was, or maybe he was being negative. I was like, yeah, that's what happens when you're not the best player on the team anymore. Like those same words don't mean as much. I kind of felt bad for him though. And then at the same time, I was like, could the Warriors use it? And it was like, no, that did not work well. When it was okay, but it didn't mean that they were a better team because he was on it. But I was like, could he run the second team? And he'd have the same issues that all their guards currently have with the more athletic, faster players. But yeah, CP, man. Kind of bummed.
I'm bummed too. Like I can't help but think that there was some James Harden influence. Because wasn't there an issue with James Harden and CP just having very, like, almost contrasting leadership styles in Houston? Like, towards the end of that Houston regime there, like, there was some butting heads, and they weren't, like, totally friends. They weren't friends at all after. Like, I wonder if there was some Harden influence to get. My Clippers buddy just says, no, it's like Ty Lue and what is it, Lawrence Frank is their GM or something. Like those guys need to go, but Ballmer hasn't cut them, and he's saying that they might have some dirt on Ballmer for the aspiration stuff.
Oh, maybe CP has some dirt
on
him.
Someone tweeted that CP knows where the trees are buried.
So the Giannis thing, I mean, there's not much about the Giannis thing.
It feels like impending doom. That's what I worried about. And I went on a long rant about the Oklahoma City Thunder on how, like, I'm worried about, you know, their future.
them getting
just
Giannis,
them having the war chest of picks and kind of just holding it over everyone. Like, we could go for Giannis, or we don't have to, or we could go for all these players. Like, there's, I
would they have to, they would have to change their offense a little bit. You can't have Shea and Giannis kind of do similar things with the basketball.
I know, but it's just your turn, my turn. Go sit on that damn corner while Giannis cooks, vice versa. but they can literally do a trade for Giannis. And I don't know how, you know, future salary cap would look, but were you, because Chet and J-Dub are still on their rookie deals, and I believe next year is when their actual extensions kick in. So they don't even make that much money right now. It'd be like a Hartenstein, I forget what, like, it's like Hartenstein, Dort, and I think Cason Wallace or Jalen Williams, the bigger Jalen Williams instead of Cason. That would get it done money wise. And the thing is, why, like you think with Giannis, is like, okay, you want a young player in picks, where I just don't know how many teams can offer that. And with Oklahoma City Thunder, it's like, how about we give you 7 first round picks because we have 8 more that we're okay with? Like, they just overload the trade offer with picks where they could bypass the, oh, we need a promising young player with that. I think they can. That's why, like, an offer of Hartenstein, Dort, and Cason Wallace is just there to get to the money, and you're not, you know, then we'll just overload you with the amount of firsts that we own. But the thing with the Bucks, though, is that we have to keep an eye out for is that they don't even own their future. So it's like, if you get rid of Giannis, like 1,000%, you should try to tank and rebuild. But if you don't own your first round picks, maybe you want to try and trade Giannis in a deal where you get that stuff back. But they have pick swaps and firsts, like, sent to Atlanta, I believe sent to New Orleans, if that's still from the Jrue Holiday deal. And then, of course, Portland from the Dame deal. They're just everywhere, like, except for with the Bucks. So I don't know how they're going to do this. I think I think Giannis is not going to be a Buck by the start of next season. I'm not as, I don't know. Do you think he gets traded by the deadline, or do you think it's more of an offseason thing?
I have a hard time because of this second apron stuff, seeing how these trades actually work. Like, even easy trades seem like they're really hard to do, and this one it seems like a nuts trade. You know, you mentioned OKC. Isn't the Spurs one even scarier?
Yes, at the OKC and Spurs are like the two teams I'm like just looking at and seeing like who's gonna do it. And with OKC, I feel like they can wait until the offseason and make a deal for Giannis, so they could include, you know, maybe it's Chet. So because I'm interested on how the books will look, because if you keep, like I said, you can make the trade right now without Chet or Jada because they're on the rookie deals. But what happens when next year kicks in and $14 million goes to $40 million for both of those players? And now you're on the books of Shea at 50, Giannis at 50, and then J-Dub and Chet at 40-40. Like, what ends up, you go into the second apron and then all that stuff starts to happen. So I'm wondering, like, would they rather wait till in the offseason and just trade Chet and one other player for Giannis and be able to stay under the second apron? But in my mind, if I'm, you know, Presti, like, do I maybe want to make the move now so that San Antonio won't get him? Because if it goes to San Antonio, it feels like, you know, of course, so many things could happen in this crazy league, but it would seem like he's there for a while. People don't go to San Antonio and want to leave if you're a star.
Right. That is pretty fascinating. Just the idea. I mean, we've been waiting for it, right? Like, people, once Giannis became Giannis and he got his title, it was almost like,
yes,
the clock started
totally
ticking,
agree,
as to when he was going to be gone. So, yeah, and the Warriors, you know, the Warriors, Steph, remember when Steph drafted him in that All-Star game? but the Warriors just don't have enough. They are, I can't even imagine how they would even try and compete with an offer unless Giannis was like, I only want to go to one place, which I don't think is going to happen. All right. So nothing really else. We mentioned the Giannis injury or the Zion injury. Sorry about that. And then, that's about it. So let's move over and let's talk some WNBA. Let's talk some Golden State Valkyries. I saw today that you tweeted out, you stay signed on with Project B. Whatever Project B is, like, it's there's no transparency in Project B. Do they even have a website? Like, do they have anything? Do they even have like a start time that they want to begin? Like, is it supposed to be this summer? Like, what is this winter? I guess when is it gonna even? I wish there was more information about what this thing is.
Man, we could probably figure this out right now, but I haven't really done the deep dive yet because I think that's been a thing with Project B is there's just not been that much information shared. But of like the eight players that have been, you know, introduced, two of them are Valkyries. So I think it's something that we probably should learn and pay attention to. It's even something like three or four podcasts ago. Like, I was kind of talking about it and I was like, am I stupid to be talking about this thing right now? Because there's no players signed. We know absolutely nothing. But I was kind of like, could this impact how negotiations are going? And now it just feels like it's really in our face without really knowing much. And I think it does impact negotiations because it's been reported that these players are signing like $1 million contract, right out the gates, which is pretty crazy money considering Yusei was coming in to make $70,000. So now she gets to sign most likely what is $1 million contract in Project B, and you get like equity in that league or something. But yeah, other than that, we know nothing. You know, there's rumors that it's backed by Saudi money, right? But we don't know anything. Like, I don't know how we're supposed to know. I'm kind of just waiting for the Athletic Pod to like just tell me. Just like, tell me what's going on.
Yeah, I don't think that they're just so tight-lipped on it. And I wonder if they're waiting to see what happens with the CBA. And I also wonder if the CBA, like if the WNBA ownership group is kind of seeing if they have more information. Like it's almost like, I don't think the WNBA is really too worried about it, but you know, there's some pretty big names who look like they want to be a part of it. And this would be a league that would run the opposite time that the WNBA would run. So these women who sign up for this league will be playing like year round. And if you're the WNBA, you would go, okay, well, so they're going to get hurt. Like who can play year round like that? So that's a little bit of a worry, but it was just fascinating. I did not expect, like, you could have gave me 10 guesses on who was going to be the next person to sign up for Project B. I would have never guessed Yusei.
I'm trying to think, she might be the first person from that draft class. Because it's been like Camila Cardoso. I think they started with Alyssa Thomas and then Jewel Lloyd, and then Jonquel Jones. And then there's a Chinese player, and I'm forgetting her name. But then it was, you know, Janelle and Yusei. And there hasn't been that many, and Yusei is one of them. So, you know, good for her. Get that bag. This might be irresponsible podcasting, but this is the Google AI from when does Project B start? It says launch date, November 2026, season duration, November 2026 to April 2027. Location, games will be held in Europe and Asia. Scheduled, the season is designed not to conflict with the WNBA season.
So it's less than a year to start.
Yeah.
That's wild. I don't know. I feel like they have to have a website if they're a year, less than a year, they need a website. All right. So let's talk about, I guess we could make a little bit of a mention. Did you watch any of Veronica's three-on-three?
Yeah, I watched a little bit of it.
How was it?
The three-on-three game is interesting. It's not entirely for me, but it's nice to see WNBA players play basketball because when you watch the college players, you start to forget the WNBA players are like, it's just such a better time to watch them because they're so much better. So it was nice to see Veronica, Shakira, Alicia Gray, and I think it was Naz Hillman as to play again, especially Veronica. Like, it's so much more of a constant reminder that this is like an all-world defender. Like, she is so good defensively. It's like incredible. Like, the Warriors could use a point of attack player like Veronica Burton right now. It feels like that's what they're kind of missing. And she's just so good at moving her feet, keeping that player in front of her. She's so strong too. So it's just like, you can't really bully her. And I have nothing but good things to say about Burton.
So Ben and Serena, they had a really fun post. They had a fun exercise, which is let's be GMs of the two new expansion teams, the Tempo and the Fire, and let's put together our expansion draft picks for what we believe will be the available players. So what they did is they did all the protections, and they only did five, and then they also made all of the picks. And so the five players that they protected for the Valkyries were Veronica Burton, Eustay, Ileana Rupaire, Janelle Salon, and Kayla Thornton. We had some people in the Discord, or one specific person in the Discord, I believe it was Casta, said, I don't know if they're going to protect Thornton. And I thought about that for a second. And one, she's coming off a knee injury. Two, they were able to make the playoffs without her. So I get that perspective. But the team should be cooking if Kayla is back full strength. Like, she is, if not their best player, their second best player, at least on the court, as we saw last year. You know, if it's Veronica, then Kayla's right there next to her. Like, that's how good they were. But if you protect Kayla, then you cannot protect someone like Carla or someone like Vandalicini. So what did you think about their choices for the five protections?
Am I back?
You're back.
Were you saying, what do I think about their selections and their protections?
Yeah, what did you think about the five protections?
It's just tough because I know that, you know, expansion draft stuff needs to start coming out because it would have been in like a week or two, and it's like, you know, good content to get out there. It gets a lot of clicks, but we just still don't know the rules, man. Like, we still don't know. And that means a lot to know how many protections you get, to know what the undrafted free agency rule is. That's kind of what I'm most looking for. But I think what I liked from that exercise that they did is kind of seeing where the rest of the teams, you know, cause it's like, I don't think that their five is going to be the exact five that we protect, that the Valkyries protect, but it's pretty damn close, right? So it's kind of interesting seeing, mm-hmm. you know, their protections for the rest of the league. Dallas especially, like, they, Arike Ogunbowale was not protected, and she was selected in their mock draft. So I think with Kayla, I think if you do not protect Kayla, and there is, I think she and there's only five protections, I think she probably gets selected. And so are you okay with that? You know, just the idea of, like, if the Valkyries had the opportunity to, I know, like, given Kayla's circumstances, she was an all-star, but she missed a lot of time. Like, imagine mm-hmm. if the Valkyries had the opportunity to select an all-star. Like, I think they would have. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just think that, but the thing is, from my experience so far watching kind of, you know, of course we can't like watch her up close like we can with the players or with Coach Knapp, but I'm talking about Ohema Nianan and her GMing style. I have felt like I've talked about, you know, maybe what I would do as a GM, and it kind of feels like I'm trying to like be advantageous and, you know, make all these deals. And then in reality, like, kind of nothing happened. And I wonder, like, if she's more mm-hmm. of like a relationship kind of GM, like, you know, Kayla helped build the culture, build the foundation of this team. Like, I think putting my faith in you and making you a protection, like, that might go a long way versus, you know, not protecting you and maybe making the advantageous thing, which is Carla. You know, Carla's not nearly the player Kayla Thornton is right now, but she has, you know, years left on the books, and not, you can't say that for a lot of players in the WNBA right now, that you can actually have them for sure on your team the following season. So I do think that, you know, seeing her GMing style, I feel like Kayla gets protected. So seeing what we've seen so far, no trades, you know, she hasn't made any trades. Feels like not, you know, just it hasn't been, I guess, like the, you know, the trade deadline or the free agency splash. It hasn't been like very splashy. It's been very like reserved. Mm-hmm. So I feel like not protecting Kayla is splashy. Like, it's like, whoa. So I don't know. I guess the Julie Van Loo thing was a little, but it's like when then we looked into it and we were like, okay, maybe not. Maybe that wasn't a big deal. So what do you think?
Yeah, I think the question would be, well, if you protected Carla, the Vandalicini is still out there.
Is their name with a Z, Kayla, please?
Zandalicini.
Starts with a Z.
Zandalicini.
Yeah.
And she could possibly go as well because she's a shooter. Now, some Valkyries fans may say, well, she doesn't play any defense or she's slow footed or whatever. But she makes shots. And so it would be Carla or her or Kayla, and you can only protect one. And I think it'd have to be now their brass probably understands, since they just went through the expansion thing, and because they were so successful, the other teams are probably going to try and duplicate
and
what
you know
Valkyries
who the
did.
Portland GM is. It was mm-hmm. the VP of the Valkyries, you know, the one role under Ohema. So she knows this team, Vanya Cervenovic. She knows this team, you know, inside and out. And I think that's probably why Sabrina, or I forget who, if it's Sabrina or Ben, but they had Portland selecting Maria Conde, who I probably say that name to you and you're probably like, who the hell is that? It's because she didn't play. Selected from the Chicago Sky in last year's expansion draft, tears her ACL overseas. And is now playing, I believe,
Achilles, I think.
Yeah. Achilles. And I think she was playing on the team that Janelle and Caitlin Chen are playing on right now, but it looks like she's playing in France right now. But, you know, an international player, Vanya seems to, you know, have her eye, like know about all the international players. I think when I talked to Yustay, like, that was the one person from the Valkyries org that she had already known was Vanya. So she's kind of in, she knows her way around the international scene. So it makes sense for her to go in the direction of Conde. But I got to imagine, at least from Toronto's perspective, that if Kayla was available, I think they'd select Kayla. But I don't know. It's tough to think about because Kayla is the obvious person, in my opinion, if there is undrafted free agent rules set in place that you can only select one. I might leave Kayla out there if it's only one, but if you can kind of just go nuts and select them all. And last year, I don't think, I'm forgetting if there was a rule that you couldn't select them or if it was that it would only make sense to select one because you would only be able to offer one a core designation. So I don't know. It's just tough. It's tough with this stuff because it's fun and it's very interesting and it's fun fodder. But like, it's like we just don't know the damn rules because I believe Zandalicini is a restricted free agent or she's one of those reserved or something. I don't think she's unrestricted. I don't think. And then Carla, of course, is still on her rookie scale, so it just would make sense to prioritize. You know, I know. Of course, Kayla's a better player than Carla, but just given. Carla, I think, still has some potential. I'm not saying I don't think Carla's. Yeah.
Well, one of the problems last year was Carla's jump.
I don't know how she's shooting not in there. Spain right now. I feel like I should look this up. But
and Sabrina in the article, Sabrina Merchant mentioned that her free throw percentage is actually really good. So you would think that she can improve the long distance shooting because her free throw percentage is good. So that's something to think about. And she's just so young. Do you want, you know, you're going to bring over Yustay, who is very young. Carla, you have Carla, who's very young. You're going to draft somebody who's going to be young. How many young players do you want? Are they going to add, you know, are they going to bring in more? They may bring in more international players who are going to be younger. So it's really about how you want to set your future. But I feel like a lot of that, they may decide differently based on the CBA, which we'll talk about right now. The players, they want to kind of get rid of the core thing. Now that may be just leverage, like, oh, you know, well, we want to get rid of the core thing, so you give us this and we'll be okay with the core thing. It could be one of those things. But there's like actual changes that, you know, both sides are talking about. The WNBA side wants to have like this draft camp stuff. And if you don't come to the draft camp, then there are things that you don't get.
50% of your salary if you don't come.
It's so stupid. So that sounds really dumb to me. There are rookie contracts. The players want the contract scaled down from 4 years to 3 years because you can then be cored a couple of times, so it can really push your free agency.
Can I say that stat? I thought that was an interesting thing. Is that you hypothetically? Mm-hmm. I think from the Athletic piece, they just said what if you have the 4 year rookie scale? I think the fourth year is a team option, and then you are a restricted free agent for 1 year, and then you're cored 2 years in a row. So you finally hit an unrestricted free agency, 4, 5, 6, 7 years after you were drafted. And if you are a college player, you're getting drafted in the same year that you turn like 22. So that you're now 29 years old, finally hitting unrestricted free agency. Mm-hmm. If those all align, which likely would be like a star player, how that would.
Baseball.
So that, they're trying to change that. So it's a 3 year rookie scale instead of the 4 years, with the fourth year being a team option. And that makes sense. I understand why they'd want that. But have you seen, what about the team housing stuff? They want to get rid of team housing and apartment or housing stipends that they give out, which I think is tough considering that they aren't paying all too much right now, but I know that's expected to go up. And what is,
and there's a lot of 10-day mm-hmm. deals, 10-day contracts, because they have limited roster space. And so you're not locking these players, all of these players, into full season. So what does a player do, if they don't know, maybe I'm with Golden State for 10 days. Maybe I'm with them for a month. A little bit more expensive to mm-hmm. live out here, to rent an apartment in the Bay Area than it is in some of these other places. So, yeah, that's an interesting one, too. That one seems a little bit like demeaning, I guess, is the word that I thought, like the ownerships being kind of looking down upon the players in some way. Like, that's how I took that one. Some of the other stuff is, we've talked about the revenue sharing, and the players, obviously they still want that 50-50, that 50-50 revenue sharing. And they were saying that the current league proposal actually has their share of the pie lessening as the deal goes on, which is kind of an interesting thing. And from the ownership perspective, I'm sure it's like, well, we think revenue is going to go up here, so you're still going to get a large piece, but being less is, if you have $100 and you get 10% of that $100, and then it goes up to $500 and you get 8% of that $500, it's still more than the 10% of the $100. Like, I think that's how it works, but still, why do you want to put those limits on it unless you believe that you're owed some of this in some way and you're trying to catch up to zero? I wonder if that's how the ownership is also looking at it. So in the WNBA's latest proposal, the max contracts were 1.2, which is base salary plus revenue sharing. And the average salary would be projected to be 500. So that is quite a jump. The WNBA Players Association is focused on the total league revenue. And they said that the proposed structure of the new deal from the owners would result in players receiving less than 15% of total league revenue. So there is quite a gap there, from 15% to 50%. That is, they have a lot of work to do. And this latest agreement was to push it out, the deadline, to January 9th. So that is about 5 weeks away. NECA says that the players don't feel valued, and it feels like they've been heard but not listened to. And my question is, well, how does 5 more weeks change that?
Yeah.
You know, well, you guys are at a standstill here, and I'm not sure 5 weeks is necessarily going to
be. I was talking to
that.
Someone earlier today, and we were talking about, like, do you feel like a lockout is still like, what do you think there's going to be a lockout? And I kind of felt like after the October extension, when they needed to figure it out by October 31st, and then they're like, okay, we'll do a 1 month extension, like, things seemed more like the vibes and the messaging, it seemed more like dire or more likely for like a lockout. Like it just did not seem good. It seemed like they were so far apart, and this time around it feels like they're still far apart, but at least, you know, the money's been going up, but there's still like all these other things that they're like, okay, we'll bring the money, but we're taking away team housing, we're taking away all this other stuff, we're starting the draft early. It's like, okay, they still got to figure out some of this stuff, but it doesn't feel like the vibes and the messaging, like, it doesn't feel as bad as it did a month ago. So I do wonder, like, if, you know, these 6 weeks they'll be able to figure something out, because that what you said, NECA said, like, you know, we feel like we're being heard but not listened to, or like that we feel to be, we're like we're being disrespected. Like, I remember Satu Sabali saying that many a time during the season. Like, that's been a very consistent message. So in my head, I'd be like, okay, well, then we're headed towards a lockout because they keep saying the same damn thing. And, you know, it seems like from the owner's perspective, it's nothing's changing. But it just doesn't feel that way as much as it did after the first extension. So I kind of am optimistic that they're going to figure something out in these 6 weeks. But I don't have, you know, the behind the scenes or to confidently say that they're going to do that. It's more so just vibes.
And they've mentioned wanting to start the season earlier, which doesn't make any sense whatsoever because it's fully reliant on the end of the women's college season and the draft. Like, are you going to start this draft during Final Four weekend? Like, how do you? That doesn't sound smart. But I do wonder, the Players Association, they do have a trick up their sleeve. All Caitlin Clark has to do is come out and say, we are going to be patient. We are not going to sign a bad deal. It is up to the owners to come to the plate with something a little bit more of a partnership. And if Caitlin was to come out and put a little bit of pressure on the league and make the league look bad, you have this very diverse audience. Now, I know that our Bay Area Valkyries audience is going to be way more diverse than everyone else's. But you go to a Valkyries game, and that is an audience that is going to be much more player-centric, player-focused, than, you know, rooting. Like, sometimes you see in the NFL, like, fans root for the owners for some weird reason. And you have a league that is a little bit, you know, the WNBA, to be a fan of the WNBA, you're probably a little bit more savvy about certain things. And if you had the most popular player, the most famous player come out and say, ownership bad, you guys need to step up to the plate and take us seriously, I think that publicly changes the dynamics of this whole thing and actually makes people go, oh, like they may not start next year. You're telling me, New York Liberty, you're calling me for renewals, and Caitlin Clark just told me that we may not start on time. Like, yeah. What's going on here? And then you put more pressure on that kind of stuff. I think that's the trick. I mean, I don't know if they'll utilize it. I don't know if Caitlin wants to.
I don't think she wants to. I mean, that's a completely different conversation, but I feel like in her two short years in the league so far, it's kind of felt like she doesn't want to shake the boat in that regard. And it felt like when she even like kind of agreed with Nafisa's you know, call out of Kathy, like that felt like a really big deal because it's like our standards are a little lower for her. Like, she does a little bit, it's like, oh wow, she really did something. But here's Paige on the other hand, like, just like, you know, so on board with everything. And it's just like, well, we expect that, you know, Paige has always kind of been like that. But I feel like I think that would be a big deal if she did it. I'm not entirely anticipating it. I'm not ruling it out. But I agree with you that changes a lot of things. She's Caitlin Clark, dude. Like, she.
It will put pressure on some folks to do some stuff. And you know, the one thing I like about Caitlin And if you, I read her book, the Christine, I think it's Christine Brenneman wrote.
There's already a book out on is that her name?
Caitlin? Christine Brenneman. Yeah. Let me see here. Christine Brennan. Sorry, I said Brenneman. Christine Brennan, kind of been at the forefront of women's sports. She wrote a book on Caitlin, and one of the things about Caitlin is Caitlin has a really good perspective of the people who came before her, the women who came before her, and were pioneers. And everyone knows the Maya Moore story of that. It's just her favorite player of all time. But she's very smart about, I'm not going to take this for granted because I know the hard work that went before me. And a lot of the women who maybe, you know, didn't get the same treatment as her, she's very much understands that part of it. So I think her spirit and her mindset is there. Does it go against the sponsorships? Yeah, does it go against what Nike wants her to do? Does it go against what her PR team wants her to do? That's the kind of thing that you worry about in this scenario. Like historically, right? Michael Jordan stayed as much in the middle as he could as possible. And he once said jokingly, like, you know, Republicans buy shoes too. Like he said that, and that became like a public statement.
I was literally about to say that.
Like, oh, okay.
For the Caitlin thing.
So, but that is out there. But I feel like Caitlin in today's society is a little bit more of a feeling kind of person than the pop culture figure that was Michael Jordan. So I would love to see it because I get why the players want what they want. And I sort of get why the owners are like, hold on here. We've been trying to get this thing running for 20 some odd years. We finally had two really good seasons. Like, let's not put the horse before the cart. Like, I get that, but I also get ownership. They just penny pinch at everything. So some of that, I don't really believe in it, but they have a card to pull here. And I think if they did it, I think it would actually work. And I think it would actually create the sides and you would have fans starting to go, you're like, oh yeah, why don't the owners want to give them, like, the NBA gets 50%. Why do the owners only want to give the WNBA 15%? Like, what is the deal here? It doesn't sound fair. I think that would put a lot of the onus on them. So
I have one more thing to say because we didn't touch on it, but obviously there's a women's college basketball season going right now. The Valkyries have the 8th pick in the draft. And I was just going to say to people who want to keep an eye on specific college players for Valkyrie purposes, I believe that I said in our Discord, which is another reason to join the Discord, we talk about this stuff, but I'm anticipating for them to be looking at specifically this first player because Natalie Nakase was in the audience when UCLA played Tennessee, and this player had a really good game, Gabriela Jaquez. I'm anticipating that the Valkyries are keeping an eye on Gabriela and maybe would select her with that 8th pick. The same goes for South Carolina's Raven Johnson. The same goes for Gianna Neepkins of UCLA as well. And the same goes for Medina Okot from South Carolina. So two UCLA, two South Carolina. There's a few other players. Ohio State transfer to Ole Miss. Cody McMahon is someone who I'm kind of keeping an eye on as well. More so, like, I'm just wondering of the direction of what they want to draft. Do they want to kind of keep, you know, someone who can hit a three-point shot but also has that gritty defense that, you know, Coach Nat seems to like to coach? I think a lot of those players fit that, except for Neepkins. She's more of just a sharpshooter. But I know it seems like there's a kind of a polarizing belief of where she should fall. Like, I know the Sierret's pod for the Ringer. I feel like she's kind of tossing around like 5 or 6 for Neepkins when there's kind of been like a consensus top 6 or 7. Then anyone that falls after that is anyone's game that Neepkins hasn't been a part of. But, you know, so she's kind of zagging and saying that, hey, maybe, you know, Neepkins is a 5 or 6. Player. So a couple other people have that belief too. So just something to keep an eye on. I think this Jaquez thing though, she's had some, you know, kind of role player, but this year there's been some leaps and high scoring games, kind of does it all, similar to her brother, can shoot the 3 ball, play defense, cut,
he does what you want, you know, someone who wants to a winning role player to do. I think that would fit well on the Valkyries, but I'll continue to watch and keep an eye out and update as we go.
Are we going to that
true
classic?
We should. That's I believe it's like the weekend of like the 18th or the 20th or the 21st. It's around that, the Invisalign Bay Area Women's Classic, and it's like USC, Stanford, Berkeley, and is it Ohio State again? I forget who the fourth school is.
I don't remember. I want to see Jazzy.
That'd be cool.
All right, that is it from here. We'll be back next week, and we can actually go whenever next week, because the Warriors only have one game next week. That's on Friday, so we'll figure it out. Probably Thursday, maybe Wednesday if necessary. But we'll be back to talk more stuff, and stuff's happening in Warriors land for sure with some of these guys coming back, and then we're just sort of at the mercy of the CBA. Like I said last time, once this thing gets agreed upon, then it's like a full steam ahead, and there's going to be so much stuff to talk about. So I can't wait for that to happen. All right, for Bri, I am Double G. See you when we see you. Peace out.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.